You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ben Shapiro reacts to SCOTUS. Abortion decision warns left will erupt. The Daily Wire's Ben Shapiro reacted to the Supreme Court's abortion decision on his podcast Friday, calling it a victory for human life and a warning that the left will erupt over the decision. The Supreme Court released a 6-3 decision Friday morning in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, which has the effect of overturning Roe v. Wade, the landmark 1973 abortion case that legalized abortion nationwide. This means states are now free to regulate abortion. They are now free to protect unborn human life. That is what this decision means, Shapiro said. It means that hundreds of thousands of children who would have been killed in the womb will now live. This is a victory for human life. This is a victory for all human beings who are made in the image of God. Shapiro warned listeners to prepare for a weekend of rage, since presumably the left is now going to lose its ever-loving mind, noting the recent violent attacks on pro-life clinics and churches. There's going to be a hue and cry across the land where we were told that women everywhere are going to be suffering from back alley abortions and all the rest, Shapiro said. Part of the court's job is to say this is not in our purview because it ain't in the Constitution, he said. But according to the left, everything is in the court's purview so long as the left has its own policy prerogatives greenlit by the Supreme Court. Shapiro added, from a moral point of view, I would love to see the pro-life movement win across the board. Well, the Constitution is making a comeback this week with giving New York the right to carry, and now this. And as Ben points out, the rage will certainly descend. I imagine we will have a burning building or two to contend with, and all the doubters in the so-called truth movement that don't think anything could just be what it is think that this is all a setup to get Democrats elected in the coming elections, a bait and switch, if you will. And it is a massive turnaround from the direction our country has been going in, from drag shows with kids to overturning Roe v. Wade. It's like we are properly schizophrenic at this point, a nation divided. My personal feeling about this is I'm happy more babies will get a chance at life. That's just my feeling about it. I understand the complexities of the issue and have struggled to really support my own idealistic views on it to ultimately support pro-choice, but my heart is pro-life, and so I feel celebratory over it. But I'm sad for the division and further rage that it will provoke, the never-ending storm of controversy and division. Children are a gift to the world, and they should be protected. I believe life is sacred, and at the same time, I understand the responsibility of parenthood and how not everyone is ready for that choice. But in some ways, you never can be ready until your child comes and gives birth to a brand new version of yourself. You can't possibly know until that happens. And when that does happen, that little being becomes the center of your world, or should. I hate to think of all the people that missed out on that opportunity because society paints abortion as no big deal or tries to. But it is a big deal. The biggest deal, really. That's not to say that perhaps people shouldn't have a choice. I'm not so clear on this. But it is to say that I'm glad it will take deeper contemplation as a result of this. Or deeper contemplation for many, because many states will make abortion even easier, and there is always adoption. One thing that can't be denied is no matter where you are on this issue, you were alive to think about it. You were given the gift of life. In other words, you were not aborted. And how many of us have had easy lives? I personally don't know anyone who has, and that includes the so-called privileged people. Life comes with a burden, and then burden becomes the blessing. You're listening to TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Susan Bradford wrote The Shadow Dragon and The End of Globalism. She says Trump is part of the cabal. She worked at Fox. And Diane Sawyer was her hero. Oh, Susan Bradford is a freedom fighter. She's written about 5,000 books or so. The latest one is The End of Globalism. Let's hope she's right. Susan Bradford is on our Friday night. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Joseph. Thank you so much for inviting me to come on your show tonight. I'm actually thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on. I was looking through your list of books, and there are so many. But let's start off with the big news of the day, the decision of the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade, and a week of that kind of activity, with like first one being supporting allowing contributions for religious schools and or financial support for religious schools, and then the right to carry in New York and many other states, and then now this. What gives? Do you think it's a conspiracy to get Democrats elected, or do you think that it's a reaction to the sort of Marxist tyranny agenda that's been being forced down our throats for so many years at this point?
That's a wonderful, it's a very wonderful question. And I think on the surface, it appears to be a great victory for conservatives. But I think this could be more of the political theater that we've come to expect from our establishment. I think, for example, for the abortion issue, while, you know, in principle that is a victory for conservatives, the mob that is now threatening to divide the country is organized. I mean, they're typically on the Democratic side. The mob is not organically grown. It's created by powerful special interest groups, many of them funded by George Soros. And so I'm wondering if they won't use the example or the case of the abortion issue to divide our country and maybe, you know, to have riots in the streets. And I'm also a little bit maybe of mixed minds about more government funding for religious schools, because since the first Bush administration, the federal government created like a faith initiative to establish, you know, what they've done for corporations, like with private public corporations, they've also done for the churches. And what that means is that they are now able to kind of project the globalist agenda through the churches, which in turn is, you know, promoting communism from the pulpit. So I think that there are a lot of, you know, a lot of different dynamics, you know, that are unfolding.
And what about the gun thing? That now New Yorkers are allowed to like pack heat, so to speak. I mean, we always did with our style, with the way we strutted down the street. We were packing a certain kind of spiritual heat, but now it's a whole different ball game. Everyone, it's the Wild West. What do you think?
It is the Wild West. And I know that they know, you know, they being the elites, know that as long as the Americans pack heat, they've got the guns, we cannot be conquered. And so I always find it interesting that under the administrations that are anti-gun, that these shooters tend to, attack schools and get a lot of publicity, where that there's kind of a pretext generated for various gun grab operations. So, you know, it might appear that, you know, they are attempting to grab the guns maybe for a potential Chinese takeover. I hope that isn't the case. I think that their arguments tend to be a little shallow, you know, that they're less concerned with safety than they are in perhaps making the United States more easy to conquer.
Well, I agree with that, but then the Supreme Court ruling about allowing New Yorkers to carry guns goes against all of that. That's what, you know, I understand what you're saying too about it's ropey, you know, when, you know, these things happen, there does seem to be like political motivations behind it. I'm not saying it's false flags. I'm not saying it's not. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen either. So don't cancel me or freak out or do an Alex Jones on me. I understand there was a tremendous loss of life and it's horrible. And may they rest in peace, everybody who's ever died from that. Mm-hmm. And nobody is for that. So that kind of rhetoric needs to leave anyway. It's the people who don't want to see the Second Amendment taken away are concerned about tyranny, and that's obvious. And with tyranny would come a whirlwind of death unlike anything we've ever seen. So it's not that we don't care of human life. Of course we care of human life, just as those of us who spoke out against the injections care about health. We just have a different opinion, you know? So it's like those kind of accusations are always just like really short-sighted, in my opinion. But I agree with you too about the, you know, we should be focusing on school safety. I thought Tulsi Gabbard nailed it when she said single point entry and exit and metal detectors with armed guards at all the schools. And I know then people say, well, then schools are like prison or whatever. And it's like, no, not really. I mean, kids will get used to it. It's not that bad. You can dress up the metal detectors, have them hang pictures on it and stuff like that. Make it nice. You know, there's ways to make it not look like a prison and protect the kids. There are ways to do that, I believe. And it's, and even if you did get rid of the Second Amendment, you would still have criminals with guns, you would still have 3D printers, you would still have black market guns, you would still need to protect the children.
I agree with you. I think protecting the children is paramount. And I think we will have a sense of what the true agenda is maybe after the fact. So we'll have to see, you know, if a New Yorker is, like, you know, carrying guns, will New York become a safer place? Or will we have riots on the streets, you know, like a new Wild West in on the East Coast? So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but we definitely need to have maybe common sense approaches to gun regulation.
Yeah, I think common sense gun regulations is okay with me too. Like when you get into red flag laws, then you start stepping on people's rights because somebody can say you're crazy, and then it invites strange forms of tyranny. So I understand people's resistance to that. Oh, all these issues are so complicated. You know, and even Roe v. Wade, like I said in the opening, my personal feeling is that I'm happy about it, but I do understand, you know, I come from a pro-choice background, and I guess everything that has been happening over the last couple of years and seeing the propaganda and seeing the sort of evil agenda at foot, then it makes me question all of my previous beliefs, including this one. And I recently had a child, and it's one of the best things that ever happened to me. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. And I didn't think I was ready. I don't think anyone ever thinks they're ready.
That's very beautifully said. I really loved your introduction. And I was also from, you know, a pro-choice background from California originally. I'm from California, but I would never, I can't imagine that I would ever personally make the choice to have an abortion. And I'd want, you know, I believe that life does begin at conception, but I can understand that there are circumstances where that might need to happen. Like if the mother's life were at risk, you know, potentially if she couldn't afford to raise the child, if the child were the product of a rape. In those circumstances, you know, you would want to have the abortion within the first trimester, but I really think it's a very difficult decision to make. I certainly would not make the decision to end the life of my child, but I can understand that there could be circumstances when, you know, you might have to make that tough decision. But given, you know, what we now know of abortion, that, you know, Planned Parenthood, at least according to some of the reports that were released,
Mary Sanger,
were maybe selling, you know, Mary, they were selling
the DNA to China,
the DNA to China, and also the aborted fetuses, like their parts. They were,
yeah,
it was a huge a trade, you know, very lucrative trade. So it's kind of a,
yes,
you know, seedy agenda.
Yeah, well, that's why these things are really complicated. Of course, people that are, you know, have Christian faith, which I do as well, for some of them, it's very simple. Mm-hmm. It's like life is sacred. It begins at conception and the end, and it's no longer your right. The Europeans, they say first trimester, and they don't seem to have nearly the controversy around this issue that we do. I certainly am anti-abortion after the first trimester. I bend on the first trimester, and I'm sort of weighing that myself. I'm in the middle of really contemplating what my ultimate belief there is. I mean, like I said, my idealism is I'm pro-life. That's my idealism. But, you know, we live in the upside down, and this is a crazy world, and there's other factors at work, so.
life is very complicated. The bottom line is that life does begin, you know, when it begins, and abortion does take that life and it allows us to play God. But I think there are so many different complications and variables that come into play. It's not an easy call. You know, but I certainly, you know, I agree with you that it's not a decision to be taken lightly, and I would err on the side of preserving that life.
Yeah, same. I feel like we danced around a hot button topic or a really complicated topic rather well. Yay us. High five to you over there. That's a difficult conversation to have. We're probably both canceled. I'm sure we already are. But anyway, so listen, so your latest book is it The End of Globalism? Is that the latest one?
It is the latest one.
Okay, and also your within The End of Globalism, is that the part where Trump is part of the cabal, or is it just the whole thing? I hope this is the end of globalism. Are you optimistic?
I know that on the surface it does appear that the tyranny has won, and that it's that their global agenda is a fait accompli. But as I've
I don't think so.
Dug,
I don't
oh,
believe
don't
that. I actually no. I think, and I'm sorry to like storm in, but I think that there's a great awakening happening, and that they're on fumes, and it does seem like they're sort of threatening that, and the threat of that still looms large, and it could end up being that. But I really feel like this, you know, it's the emperor's new clothes, you know, and there was a few of us children saying, hey, but he's naked. And now more and more of the crowd are saying, hey, he's naked, you know. And I feel like we're about to reach that ignition point where that whole narrative, the COVID narrative, the injection narrative, is going to crumble. And when that crumbles, then the environmental, like then one will crumble. All like those news sources that promote these ideas to people will suddenly, all of them will come into question. And hopefully right on top of Elon Musk opening up free speech on Twitter, and then all of a sudden people will have multiple viewpoints to look at and sort of ascertain what the truth is. And the truth is very different than pretty much all of those narratives. But anyway, you continue on.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. And I mean, not only does the emperor have no clothes, but the very foundation upon which they built this, you know, their global structures and these kind of corporations masquerading as governments, you will see that they were based upon fraud, and that they are in many cases illegitimate and color of law, so that they do not have the authority that they profess to have, but they're trying to kind of intimidate the public into acquiescence. And it's as if I know that that part of their value system requires them to seek our consent. And I believe that the reason that they do so is that they lack the authority. And so they, you know, they want to claim that authority by, you know, creating the appearance that we have agreed to it, and we agree to it because many of us do not in fact know that the system, the structure, is illegitimate, and that we have power within ourselves to resist it and to, you know, to claim our constitutional rights.
And how do we do that?
Okay, that's a good question. Part of that is through awareness. So it's a matter of educating yourself on what the government can and cannot do, what your rights are. And I think there's also a very active, I guess it's called like a sovereign movement. There are some parts of that that are a little bit sketchy, because I think that the movement itself has been maybe compromised by you know, the establishment, so they're kind of leading that movement astray. But at the very core, the sovereign movement, what we're talking about, like state nationals, have been able to reestablish themselves, not as corporations who are, you know, lost at sea, whose assets have been claimed by the Vatican, by our government, but that we are living, breathing human beings who have constitutional rights. Part of that requires taking steps to, correct the false presumptions that they have. And they know that they're false presumptions, but unless we correct them, they're allowed to assume that we're giving them rights to claim our assets and to take our freedoms. So I think that information is available for those who search for it, and it isn't too difficult to find. But that's one step. And the other part of it is to, to educate ourselves. And I think if there are issues that compel you that you find, drawing you to look further, follow the money and follow the legislation. And you'll find in many cases that what they are doing is illegitimate. It isn't based on the arguments or the foundation upon which they're trying to base their agenda and advance their agenda. So I think we need to kind of acquire the clarity, and since the media will not provide us the truth, we need to ferret it out for ourselves. And with that truth, as the Bible has always said, with the truth will set us free. So we need to kind of empower ourselves to find and be able to discern the truth, and then to act accordingly.
Is that same thing as claiming you're a U.S. national rather than a U.S. citizen? Is that on that same level?
It is, and I think I'm not an expert in this particular topic, but I believe that a U.S. citizen implies that you are an employee of the federal government, and the federal government
right.
is a corporation, and which contracts directly through the Vatican. So essentially, you have to, as an employee, you have to do as
income
the Vatican
tax.
Dictates. Income tax,
right.
and other things.
Yeah, no, I've been given this website to go. Actually, I almost called him my friend. I guess he is my friend. He's been on the radio show twice, Mitchell Gerber, who covers all of the organ harvesting and all that insanity that goes on. He told me about it, the sort of statenational.us, or it's like you can become a U.S. national and sort of claim deeper levels of your rights. And of course, I said, I'm going to definitely check that out. And of course, I have not checked it out yet. So that's as far as my knowledge goes. But so do you know more about that? Like, do you know sites people can go to get that kind of information?
One site that I would recommend is Anna Von Reitz. Her site, she is a common law judge in Alaska, and she has compiled a lot of information that I think would be very helpful, for your
okay,
audience.
And how do you, so it's videos. Anna Von, is it A-N-N-A-V-O-N?
Anna, and yeah. I think V-O-N, I think Reitz is R-E-I-T-Z.
R-E-I-T-Z, R-E-I-T-Z, yeah, see, no one would have ever found that without spelling it. All right, we'll be right back with Susan Bradford after these brief words on TNT Radio.
Jesse Zerwell on TNT Radio.
It seems like the armed forces of Ukraine know their time is up. They're retreating, and they're pursuing a scorched earth policy in their retreat, which translates, as I said, to this indiscriminate shelling, which is killing women and children. We saw these reports yesterday. What's your assessment of what's going on here?
I'm a little bit at a loss of how to explain this. It seems to me that this is indiscriminate. It's not even indiscriminate shelling. I think they're deliberately shelling civilian areas of Donetsk. And it seems to me like it's nothing more than an act of vengeance, because they are losing the war. They have pretty much lost the war. And now all they have left is to inflict as much harm as they can on the civilian population of Donetsk.
Jesse Zerwell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you won't find PTSD by looking at a thermometer. Sorting out a mental health concern takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a bandage. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, call 1-800-662-HELP for free and confidential information and treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support.
In this day and age, everybody deserves the right to access phone and internet services. Whether you're from regional, rural or remote Australia, the Regional Tech Hub can independently assist with providing advice on connectivity options in your local area, or work with you and your service provider to resolve outstanding issues with phone and internet. And our service is absolutely free. Find out more by visiting regionaltechhub.org.au or by calling 1300 081 029. RTH is an initiative of the Australian Government, delivered by the NFF.
Government faked a pandemic. Government faked a test. Government faked a cure. Government must be held accountable. There's nothing fake about us. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Susan Bradford tamed the shadow dragon. Susan Bradford worked at Fox. She says Trump is part of the cabal, and if we're not careful, we might fall. Susan Bradford is on the show right now. So, Susan, you think Trump is part of the cabal? You're not picking up what he's putting down. You're not buying it. You're saying he's a faker, he's a phony, he's part of the plan. Give us the skinny on it.
please don't shoot the messenger.
I'm not attached. I'm not attached to Trump at all. Like, I don't have that. Like, I don't know. I feel politically homeless. I certainly am not Team Biden either. I kind of like Ron DeSantis. But even that, when I mention him, I do like him. I like what he's saying about the energy. He's saying he would do everything differently than Joe Biden. That's clearly the way forward. He also spoke out against tyranny and Marxism recently as a result of the Brazilian election. So I like him. But then, you know, I watch Nino or something and he tells me, oh, you're being a dupe if you like them, because that's what they're trying to make you. They're trying to make you like them, and I always fall for those tricks. So I don't know. It's hard to ascertain which way is up or down anymore, but go ahead. I'm not going to shoot the messenger. Give us the whole thing about Trump.
Thank you. I'll try to give you the skinny. I think understanding who's who requires a lot of discernment, and the media certainly tries to obfuscate matters. But with Trump, I tried to give him every benefit of the doubt because I wanted him to succeed. But the truth of the matter is that he has been indebted to the Rothschilds since the 1980s, and I could have documented his deep state credentials in The End of Globalism. He was actually recruited to become president in 1987 by the CIA, which is as deep state as you can get, to serve as president in 2015, at the time when the Rothschilds' 200-year contractual control of the British monarchy was set to expire. So he was kind of set up to kind of lead the public into this transition period when the Rothschilds and the Vatican were kind of poised to lose a lot of control. And he was kind of set to kind of maybe play the role of the Pied Piper. And then once he kind of led the flock astray, the Rothschilds and these elites would try to reposition themselves for the kill. And I think very tellingly, Mar-a-Lago is situated next to an island called Jupiter Island, within 5 miles. A few of the Bush family members live on Jupiter Island, and Jupiter is actually it's the home of Les Wexner, the CEO of Victoria's Secret, which was at the heart of the Jeffrey Epstein pedophile scandal. And it is the headquarters of the deep state. It's where Avril Harriman established the national security apparatus. He recruited Bush to kind of advance it, and it's considered to be Bush's second home, his second White House. So this was the training ground and the area where they were coordinating psychological operations and different kind of wars against the American people. So to see that, you know, Trump has strong connections with Jupiter Island, that he has longstanding ties to, you know, to the Bush dynasty and the Clintons, the Rothschilds, the Vatican, that he has not really, you know, publicly acknowledged, while professing to be a populist, you know, I think, you know, that we can safely say that he is deep state. And if we look at his actions, you know, Jared Kushner was working with Google CEO Eric Schmidt to develop the track and trace technology for the vaccines. And, you know, Trump pushed the vaccines on the American people. He bragged about how much wealth the pharmaceutical companies were making. So I think that he appears to be more interested in money and advancing his own interests over, you know, protecting the American people.
Well, that's true about the vaccines thing. That is undeniable. He has been pushing those hard. He became an incredible vaccine salesman, you know, and even after his presidency. How do you get this information, though? Because it just sounds so bananas, even though I obviously am aware of all the propaganda and I see that there's an underlying agenda. I'm living through it. So I don't know why it's a stretch, because obviously they have to plan these things and plot these things, and then there, and obviously there's so much information we don't know, but I still am victimized by the sort of narrative of conspiracy theorists, even though I get labeled that all the time just by saying what I think is the truth. So I, like, you know what I mean? It's almost like I'm a little torn within myself. So when I hear what you just said, then I start, I also think, like, well, how do you know that? Where are you getting that information? How do you know that information is valid?
Okay, so let's establish some of the history behind kind of this a vaccine agenda. Alvaro Harriman was one of the financiers of Skull and Bone Society. That was the secret society at Yale, in which the Bush family members, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, were members. One of the agendas behind Skull and Bones was to elevate communist China to lead the New World Order while reducing the United States to a bankrupt welfare state. Yale University was intricately... Yeah, it is happening.
Yeah,
Yale,
I mean,
University
that's clear.
Was interested.
No, I'm just saying. I'm saying that does validate, because that is exactly what they're doing. They are bankrupting us, and it's clear that it's on purpose. There's no reason they don't have to do that.
No, they don't, and it is for a reason. It's we're bankrupt, we're weak, and then you have, you know, dependency. Independent people are easier to manipulate and control.
Right.
So Yale University kind of led the communist revolution on behalf of corporate America. Now, Alvaro Harriman had also he was the father of the population and the eugenics movement. He created the ideas and the strategies that the Nazis used to engage in, you know, with their eugenics experiments or gene experiments on the Jewish people. At the cornerstone of the New World Order is an agenda to depopulate the world. This was an agenda that was established at Yale. It was promoted by Bush and Harriman, and one of the weapons of choice was vaccinations. And I think through the 70s and 80s, the federal government reported that a number of children or families that were receiving vaccinations were somehow sterilized. So there was this agenda. Bush himself had acknowledged that, you know, that he wanted to depopulate the United States. Vaccines would be used for that purpose.
When did he do that?
This agenda that was in
where did he do that?
In the 80s. Where did he? He made a speech before Congress.
Really, and this is Bush Senior.
Bush Senior, correct.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I think I did see something along those lines once. Yeah. Anyway, continue.
Yes. So you have somehow Trump, who has deep and longstanding ties with the Bush family, Bush dynasty, somehow coincidentally advancing this agenda. And, you know, while he professed to be very much anti-Bush, the fact was that his chief lobbyist, Roger Stone, worked alongside the Carlyle Group's Jim Baker to help George W. Bush secure the electoral votes to win the election in 1999-2000. After the Twin Towers were struck on 9/11, George W. Bush declared war against Iran, and a leading company that Trump had used to protect his casinos in Atlantic City, called BKSH, was used to peddle the false intelligence reports that were used as a basis to lead us in the war against Iraq. So you can see that maybe the networks around Trump were promoting, the psychological operations, the intelligence that were advancing the Bush agenda.
And what's the purpose of making him a populist, or what's the purpose of the character then, if it's all like political theater, right? And they're all working in concert. So what's the purpose, in your view, of making Trump the kind of character that they then made him?
I think these characters are frequently used, like, Ross Perot, among others. Like, they create politicians who appear to be reformers. Like, they're champions of the people. And they create allow the public to kind of feel that their concerns are being heard and addressed. And once they kind of feel that kind of, or experience a bit of emotional release,
right,
they can then kind of turn their attention back to themselves and allowing the agenda in turn to continue unimpeded.
Sweet mean cycle. That's what you call a sweet mean cycle in a toxic relationship. And it creates a trauma bond. And then that bond is really hard to break. And we see that with mass formation psychosis. It's like, and Stockholm syndrome. And you see people, like, the results of the shots are just, like, they're coming fast and furious. I mean, there's so many weird deaths that are even leaking into the mainstream media. I mean, I follow Mark Crispin Miller's Substack. He has always a weekly report of all the sudden deaths of the week. And there's just tons of them, young people, lots of young people. And so the results are in, and yet still people are defending these injections. And even though that, like, I guess the move to inject 6-month-year-olds was kind of a failure, there wasn't nearly the turnout they wanted, there were still people lining up for it. Some places there were still people, putting their kids in that danger. So it is effective. I mean, if this is political theater and they do just sort of create these sort of, character dynamics, and it makes a lot of sense when you're dealing with trying to control a whole population.
Yeah, I think it's very well said, and I think you can judge a society by how it treats its most vulnerable. And I think, inject an experimental drug into children and the elderly is beyond disgraceful. A lot of the elderly have perished as well, and I know that the federal government was having to account for missing pension funds, that they were not able to support these older generations, and the vaccine served to kind of eliminate the problem to a large extent, by removing those who are entitled to the pensions that had been raided.
So that's really true too. So what else about Trump? And so what do you perceive moving forward? Who's going to be the next player in the political theater then? Do you think they're going to move Ron DeSantis up? You think Trump's going to go for it again, or what?
I personally think that that Trump is done, and I'm going to say something that it's going to sound a little bit out there, but if you'll hear me out, it's my belief that Trump rigged the election against himself, and we're now finding out that he was the mastermind behind January 6th. The reason that I believe that he did is that Maria Zach from Nations in Action had reported that a company called Leonardo S.P.A. was behind the election fraud. Its satellites were able to swap the votes that Dominion used. Leonardo S.P.A. was represented by lobbying firm Ballard Partners, which was Trump's leading fundraiser. The money for this operation, according to Zach, was laundered through the Vatican. The ambassador to the Vatican was Calista Gingrich, the wife of Trump's leading advisor, Newt Gingrich. The various characters who were involved with the election fraud, including Ballard, among others, were involved in a number of lucrative deals throughout Europe, and I've kind of documented a number of these in my book on the election fraud. And when I presented this information to some friends I have who are close to Mike Lindell, they said, you know, we know that he did this. And I said, well, why are you continuing to promote, you know, false reports? Like, they were unable to provide any evidence to election fraud. And they said, well, don't worry, you know, white hats are in control. And I don't necessarily believe that's the case. But I said, well, why would Trump go along with the fraud? And they said that he knew that the election, that the economy would crash during the next administration. So he did not want that to occur on his watch because he thought it would impact his brand. So what you see is that the financial interests that were behind the election fraud with Leonardo S.P.A. were also representing, or they also coordinated January 6th, the so-called insurrection with Ballard representing the District of Columbia alongside an organization called the Group DC, which is peopled by leading Obama campaign workers. And DC, of course, hired the police officers who opened the gates, you know, that allowed the mob to storm congressional chambers. And then following that, Trump's inner circle, including Michael Flynn, among others, launched the election audits in which they, which were riddled with fraud and other inconsistencies and questionable accounting, creative accounting, which reaffirmed the election for Biden. And at the same time, these individuals were raising vast sums of money. I think Trump raised a war chest somewhere in the range of $150 million, if I read correctly. He did not use that money to contest the election, to help them, you know, the supporters who came to Capitol Hill to show their solidarity with him. But he kind of kept that money for himself. So I think when you begin to kind of look at the bigger picture, it becomes very clear that these were political operatives who were creating political theater to advance their own private interests at the expense of the American people, which of course is, you know, business as usual on Capitol Hill.
Well, dang. I mean, Susan Bradford is out here tying all of our brains into a million knots. I'm so confused. I'm just like, what is going on?
I don't know. Maybe it didn't make any sense.
No, it made a lot of sense. It made too much sense. It's like, it's just like, oh my God. Thank God there's a break right now so I can try to like untie my brain and get my head around what you just said and have fun unwinding that onion, or unpeeling that onion rather, when we come back after these words on TNT.
Climate change. Is there anything it can't do? You won't believe this next story.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
National Public Radio is reporting there's a nationwide sriracha shortage and climate change may be to blame. Sriracha sauce is very spicy. NPR explains that it's made from a special type of pepper that only grows in certain parts of Mexico and the U.S., and they have faced drought. Ergo, climate change is causing a shortage. But wait, there's more. Another study says climate change is making sharks right-handed and deadlier. Australian scientists have found that sharks will swim to the right, due to warming ocean waters. In addition, a climate modeling study claims clashes between humans and lions will increase due to climate change. But wait, there's more. Quote, ketchup at risk from climate change, according to the UK Telegraph. Now will you support carbon taxes and the Green New Deal to save ketchup, sriracha, and prevent lions from attacking you and sharks swimming to the right? This is the wacky world of climate change. For the Murano Minute, this is Mark Murano on TNT Radio.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale,
gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home.
One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
In 2018, 2.9 million people died of the flu and pneumonia. In 2020, there was a 98% decline in influenza, but 2.8 million die of COVID. Data never lies. We mandate that the truth be told. TNT Radio.
And we're back with Susan Bradford, who just blew our minds about Trump and his connections with the cabal and sort of ultimately the globalist agenda, and that we're just all witnessing political theater. And maybe it's even more than political theater. Maybe we are, in fact, in a simulation. I'm starting to think that this is a simulation. It is an interesting time to be alive, and I have a feeling we are in for some crazy events in the next couple weeks. Do you think that this decision, I mean, it is so strange, these three decisions by the Supreme Court that run in direct opposition of everything we've been dealing with for the last few years. Do you think this is going to ignite some kind of civil war? I mean, it's certainly going to ignite insane levels of protest and all kinds of destruction, and the news cycle is, you know, going to get all of its, you know, advertisement dollars back up and everything like that. So there's motivations like that going on too. But do you think we're heading into some kind of civil war?
That's a good question. I think that some of the political operatives would like to spark a civil war. You know, we've heard reports that by October there will be riots, like food riots, due to supply chain issues, and possibly high gas prices and so forth. And it appears that they're trying to kind of ignite more political tensions between like the Republicans and Democrats. I think I read too that the Supreme Court justices feel that their lives could be in jeopardy. Like they're really trying to kind of fan the flames to maybe, you know, ignite some type of civil war.
Well, there is one already on the spiritual level. Yeah, there's definitely, well, divide and conquer is certainly the agenda. It's definitely, you know, and like you said, poverty makes people easier to subjugate and control. That's for sure as well. And, you know, I don't know. I'm just glad I'm not in New York right now. I'm glad I moved to Arizona. It's like, you know, like I used to live in the East Village right there on Avenue A. And there would be, you know, the sort of Black Lives Matter protests would be literally right outside my window. It was insane. It was kind of fun, to be honest, to sort of witness that and sort of do the whole pandemic kind of at ground zero in some kind of way. But I'm glad I'm out of there now, because the tyranny that took over in the big blue cities like that was just overwhelming to somebody who wasn't about to get the injection and wasn't going to use a fake passport to get into a yoga studio and stuff like that. So, but
the cities are certainly a very dangerous place to be at this point. They're a very dangerous place to be. And I think you're witnessing a communist revolution, you know, really rampage through New York.
Yeah. And I was surprised, because New York's supposed to be this like big, like symbol of free expression and the freaks and the radicals. And we can make it. If we can make it there, we can make it anywhere. And it, like, I don't know. It's just, to me, it's so emblematic of free expression and freedom, really. I always just felt insanely free in New York. And then the last like 6 months there, it was exactly the opposite. So What are we're in the middle of a communist takeover revolution. That's not hard to sort of see, but what are you doing to protect mm-hmm. yourself? I noticed when we talk, you're on am I divulging too much if I say flip phone? Sorry if that's too much, but like, you're careful with your data and your information. And I'm not saying that to call you out. I'm just, because obviously you're careful, so they can't get to you. But like, what do you do to protect yourself? And like, what do you recommend other people do to protect themselves in these times?
I think it's very important for American, I guess, citizens to stay out of the cities. Obviously, you want to make sure that you have, good networks where you are locally, that you know where your food supply is going to be. Maybe find a local farmer's market so that if they do kind of cut the supply chains, you have a way of feeding yourself, taking care of yourself. I know that a lot of people are recommending cryptocurrency and gold. I'm not really sure that those are good investments because the price of gold is not really linked to the price of the dollar or even to the state of the economy. Its value is determined through the gold exchanges, which are controlled by Rothschilds. So they can make them, go up or down. And if there ever were to be a case where, the economy were to collapse and you'd want to sell your gold, they could ensure that the value plummeted and so that they could, buy your gold for pennies on the dollar. And at this point, the stock market is rigged. As I think is very clear, it's become more partisan now that the Federal Reserve has been taken over by the Department of Treasury, which is a political organization. I mean, their political appointees can control it. They're funded and supported by major corporations, major investment banks. So they can, and they have the ability to kind of elevate or drop the stock market to create the illusion of prosperity or the opposite. So you're really playing a rigged game at this point. So I think you want to think in more practical terms and how to protect yourself, build your networks, and I think, stay out of the cities.
And cryptocurrency is obviously vulnerable because that's on, the internet. So they could just crash the internet at the drop of a hat, and then what are you going to do? You can't really buy a sandwich with a coin that you can't access if they do something like that, right? And is that the theory there?
Correct. And we've also seen how they're locking people out of their money. It can disappear. The USDC could be hacked. The value could plummet. You could really lose everything. And I think there are two classes within cryptocurrency and even within the stock market, whereby the whales will be able to get out early, and the average investor would be would have to kind of stay or within the market and be unable to withdraw their investment, and they could stand to lose even more. So I think that they're too risky at this point, and I think there are too many variables that you could not anticipate or control to enable you to be a truly savvy investor. So I think you could potentially expect to receive large losses by investing in crypto.
Well, Susan, you are really well spoken on all these fronts, and you're so knowledgeable. I wonder how you became this way, and what leads you to write so many books on this subject. Give us a bit of your spirit for how you got into this work, because we only have 2 minutes left.
Only 2 minutes, goodness.
I know, it went fast, didn't it?
It did go fast, and I really appreciate those kind words. I think, once I understood the perils that we faced as a nation, I wanted to do everything that I could to save, our country. And I think that before I could figure out a solution for myself or be able to communicate that solution to other people, I would need to understand the problem. So that, I think, motivated me to learn as much as I could about how the elites set up the governments, the financial institutions, and the kind of the system of oppression that we're all experiencing, to understand how they did it, why they did it, where they're taking us, and then through that understanding to kind of to acquire the clarity that we would need to find our way out of it.
Well, Susan Bradford, it's been wonderful talking to you. I'd love to have you on again.
Likewise.
We got to get you. We got to get you on a Zoom link next time, though. But you were amazing, really. That was some mind blowing information.
Oh, thank you.
And you gave me a lot to think about. You know, so I really appreciate that. Thank you, Susan. How do people get your books? How do people get your books?
Look. You can do that through my website, which is www.susanbradford.org.
Okay, www.susanbradford.org or Amazon. Susan Bradford, thank you. All right, everybody, keep listening. We'll be right back with more on TNT.